Call in now. 715-845-2155. WSAU Feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Good morning. Welcome to Feedback. It is Thursday, 8 minutes after 8 in the AM, and we appreciate you stopping by and letting us be part of your busy day. Tomorrow on Feedback, starting off, we are scheduled to be having in the studio with us, live and in living color, Congressman Sean Duffy will be stopping by and giving us an update on some of the things that have been going on with him. And, of course, we're going to ask him about the border issue and the children coming in. As a result, we probably won't have a lot of time for us to have the open phone segment of the program like we normally do on Friday. So I thought I'd throw it open for today. If you've got something on your mind, go ahead, give us a call, 715-845-2155. I thought I'd start off this morning by relaying to you an article that I read in the National Review online about a French court's decision. I know what you're thinking. Well, who cares what the French court does? It has nothing to do with us. Actually, it does. I think it is an example of something that we need to look out for and make sure that it does not happen here. What happened there may seem absurd, but I don't think it's too far-fetched of having the problem creep in over here. All right, let me give you a basic background. A food critic visited an upscale restaurant and wrote a scathing review. Basically said, and this is a highly part of this is a very significant part of the complaint. The critic said that the restaurant was a place to avoid in this little village. That is the big issue in the complaint. Well, the restaurant got very upset and filed a criminal complaint. And this is the result. A French judge has ruled against the blogger, the one that wrote the review and then posted it on her blog. She is a famous food critic in France. The reason? The review was too prominent in a Google search. The judge ordered that the post title, A Place to Avoid in This Town, that the title had to be amended and told the blogger that she now had to pay the restaurant damages for her opinion, her article, her review. She was sued by the owner of the restaurant in southwestern France after she wrote a blog post entitled The Place to Avoid in Cap Ferrel Il Giardino. According to the court documents, the review appeared fourth in the results of a Google search for the restaurant. The judge made the decision that the blog's title was to blame and had to be changed so that the phrase The Place to Avoid would become less prominent in the results. The blogger is now going to have to pay $2,000 in damages, has to change the blog title, etc., etc. The issue of whether or not the opinion was accurate did not play a part in this court decision.
Well, but I mean, to decide whether or not a restaurant is bad or something to be avoided is an opinion, as you said, and it will be different depending on the day you were there, mm-hmm. what your tastes are. Mm-hmm. What you go online of any restaurant in the country, and there are comments underneath these reviews.
Sure.
And some people like them, some people don't like them.
And people will make a decision, obviously, to go to a restaurant or to not go to a restaurant based on the review that it gets in the publication. There have been two restaurants written up for wonderful reviews here in this area that I've gone and tried based on the review that I read. And one review I agreed with, one review was like,
Now, if the blogger or if the reviewer is putting out facts that are not true, if they're saying the kitchen is infested with rats and the kitchen is not infested with rats, that's different.
I completely agree. And that's a case where the restaurant should sue and should take legal action to protect their reputation. However, if the reviewer makes the opinion that this place must be avoided at all costs, and that opinion becomes so popular that it shows up in a Google search in the top five, how can that individual be held responsible for damages to the restaurant? It's not the reviewer that is responsible for the damages to the restaurant. It's the restaurant. If you don't like the review, step it up, baby. fix better food, create a better atmosphere, whatever it takes. I find this to be a real issue. Now, the reason I bring this up is there is a trend here in the United States against some of the individuals that go to restaurants and then post their opinions. You could call it a review if you like. I kind of think that a review is done more by a professional critic.
Mm-hmm.
Opinions are posted by the everyday schmo that goes into a restaurant and says, hey, today the bacon cheeseburger was magnifique. Yesterday I had the fish sandwich and it was soggy and nasty.
And I got sick.
Yeah, you know, it's all relative. It, like you said,
yeah,
it has a lot to do with, hey, today the chef was on. He had it down. The split pea soup was incredible. Tomorrow,
or the food may be good and the person eating it doesn't appreciate it for
sure,
what it is.
Sure, you go in and you're looking for something a little bit more punch in the flavor, and it's just good old-fashioned grandma's cooking. There's not a lot of fancy, a lot of gravy.
Or it's Nouvelle Cuisine, and you're not interested in that thing.
You get three sivers of a carrot and 1 ounce of meat. You're wanting the spaghetti.
We had somebody tried a Nouvelle French restaurant here in town for a while. And that served, you know, the salad as the after the entree, and did it all in the European
sure.
French style.
Sure.
And the plate had, as you said, three baby carrots
yeah.
and a few medallions
and
of meat.
A squiggle of some kind of funky sauce that you're not sure if it's supposed to be there or if it's left over from the plate before.
We went there once,
yeah.
and there was somebody at one of the tables, and you could hear him, big guy, you
yeah.
know.
Where the hell's the steak?
Well, he said, we used to throw these carrots away on the farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
These were the rejects.
And then, you know, the response would be like, well, sir, then this is obviously not the
right.
environment for you.
Yeah.
Thank you for stopping by and trying it.
So if you went online after that experience and put on in a blog or on a message board that,
precise.
You know, the food stunk, the carrots were too small or whatever the case may be, could you
right.
be sued?
Now,
you shouldn't be able to be sued.
You shouldn't
for that.
Be, but here in the United States, this is my point. There is a growing trend. There are phone applications and websites. Yelp is one that I use quite often.
Yeah.
When I came to Wausau my very first week or two that I was here, I was going through Yelp constantly looking for places to try.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it shows or not, but Daddy likes food.
Yeah.
So I was looking for restaurants to go to.
Oh, it shows up.
Oh, it does. Okay, I was concerned. I was you know, concerned about that. A couple of the restaurants that I found that got great reviews, I agreed with wholeheartedly. The food was very good.
A uh-huh.
couple of restaurants that I tried where they were getting great reviews, I'm thinking, I'm missing something here. But the trend in the United States is that if a restaurant finds that an individual has put up a bad review, they can not just petition to have that review removed, but they can take legal action against these individuals and legal action against the
yeah,
site
you know, it's a,
that
it's
is
a,
posting it. And that, it, that seems
well, see,
inappropriate.
The internet is still basically an unregulated place in many things. It used to be word of mouth
mm-hmm.
was the thing that worked bad
mm-hmm.
for better
well,
or worse.
This is just digital word of mouth.
Yeah, but it's a lot more prevalent. It gets out a lot faster to a lot more people.
I understand, but it's still communication.
I understand.
You do not have the thought police or the language police sitting in the 400 block here in Wausau downtown monitoring what you and your friends say when you get together for the concert on the square. You should not have the same government interference when you want to post your opinion on the internet.
If you had a bad meal, though, at a restaurant, say in downtown Wausau, and decided to take your complaints to the street and walked in front of that restaurant with a message board that said, the food here sucks,
mm-hmm.
the service is terrible,
mm-hmm.
Would you be allowed to do that?
Absolutely. The sidewalk is public domain.
I'll bet you wouldn't be allowed to do
I
that.
I bet you would. I bet you would. There's not a thing they could do about it.
They would,
the
they
sidewalk
would, they would
is
call
public
it disorderly
domain.
Conduct.
How are you being disorderly?
By damaging that person's business by walking
All right, let's
in front
test
of
it. All right. Let's test it. Ladies and gentlemen, if those of you that are out there, and I know there's a handful of you that
yeah.
think this program sucks. Why don't you get your message board out right now and say, Seth Mila is a doofus and his show sucks. I want you to put a message board.
And walk out in front of the studio?
I want you to walk up and down Scott Street out in front of our studio.
You'd like that.
I'd love for that to happen. Remember, make sure you go online, get the correct spelling of my name. It ain't that hard.
Yeah.
Seth Mila is a doofus and his show sucks. A sandwich board right outside, right here on Scott Street. WSAU. We'll be right back.
Severe weather updates on WSAU.com. And on air at AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
WSAU feedback, number one with corporate weasels everywhere.
Amen, brother.
Ooh, a little Johnny Winter here, yeah.
Yeah. We mentioned in the newscast earlier that he the news just broke that he had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it? Where was he? 70 years old, and where was it?
Switzerland. I think he was on tour. He was in a hotel room in Switzerland.
Is any indication that it was drug related, or was it just heart gave out? He actually got too close to the sunlight, something like that.
I'll look.
Poor guy. All right, so let's continue on. The phone number, of course, 715-845-2155, if you would like to be a part of the program. All right, so Detroit, the city of Detroit, are you ready for this? Has seen a 37% decline in robberies in 2014 compared to the same period in 2013.
A cynic would say because there's nothing left to steal.
Well, okay, sure, that could be part of it, but actually it's not true. There's still a lot of people that live in the metropolis of Detroit. 22% fewer break-ins, 30% fewer carjackings, and just an overall drop in violent crimes, assaults, robberies, murders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when you start talking about this, Tom brings up a very good point. Why? Is it a case that there's nobody left there to rob? You can't steal something when it's all been taken already? Well, speculation can be done, but you probably should listen to an individual that is on the front lines of crime, and that would be the police chief. Detroit Police Chief James Craig says that the dramatic drop in these crimes is due partly to residents arming themselves and fighting back against the criminals. He has repeatedly argued that arming citizens deters crime and says, quote, there's no question in my mind that it's had an effect. He says criminals are getting the message that good Detroiters, is that a word, Detroiters, are armed and will use that weapon. He told the local news agency, the Detroit News, he said, I don't want to take away from the good work our investigators are doing, but I think part of the drop in crime, and robberies in particular, is because criminals are thinking twice that citizens could be armed.
They've all moved to Chicago?
Well,
commuting,
possibly.
Commuting a few miles down the road?
How far? A few miles.
Well, it's a little longer than that, but not too far. You can get there in a day.
If I was out there now robbing people these days, knowing there were a lot more people with guns, I know I'd have to rethink my game plan, said Detroit resident Al Woods.
Well, are we seeing a lot of an uptick in shootings then from homeowners shooting at criminals who are trying to break in, or store owners shooting at criminals that are trying to break in?
It appears that the mere knowledge that the guns are there is enough to be a bit of a deterrent. Now, you combine the armed citizenry with a diligent and effective police force, and you are going to have a dramatic reduction in crime. Now, the critics, we got to give the critics the same amount of attention. The critics will say, okay, fine, right now there is a drop in crime because the criminals are afraid of possibly getting shot. But what happens when these now legally owned guns get out of the hands of those that own them and on the streets and are owned by the criminals? They say that would be the reason why the flow of guns into the streets, no matter from where they come, has got to be stopped. And
the other thing is, are we seeing, since there are more guns apparently in households in Detroit, are we seeing an uptick in accidental shootings? Are we seeing an uptick in domestic violence shootings?
That would be a good statistic to take a look at. But the answer to accidental shootings and assault charges and so would go along with the fact that there has been a drop in crime. So apparently the answer is no. I understand. I do not agree with it. Please understand this. I understand the logic of, well, if there are more legally owned guns now, there will be more guns in the hands of the criminals later. I understand that logic, but I disagree with it. If you have a situation where the crime is going down, then the theft and robbery of those guns will also not be going. It won't be going into the streets. Those crimes also go down. So those that own their guns legally will keep their guns legally. That's the actual aspect of the argument for gun control that doesn't hold water. It's a speculation. When you're talking about this situation where crime, 37% drop in crime in Detroit, and the police chief attributes it to armed citizenry. Those are hard factual numbers, and it's hard to argue with. All right, let's go to the phones. Thanks for calling. What's your name?
Mark.
Mark, what can we do for you?
What is it about the facts that these people in charge don't quite seem to understand? I mean, take a look at Australia. They confiscated everything that was in sight. It was a terrible picture, if you've ever seen it, of all of these firearms piled up and being run over by heavy equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to their crime and murder rate? It skyrocketed.
Yeah, it did.
It's like, okay, I guess this is not the answer then, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, these school shootings are horrible, but it seems like people in this country don't seem to value life anymore. They don't know right from wrong, and when they've got a mental problem, they don't know where to turn, or they get shunned away from the help that they need.
I'll tell you this. The real answer to that situation is when you hold dear to an ideology, it is very difficult to let go of the ideology when it is conflicting with numbers and facts. Ideology is something you hold dear in your heart. There's emotional attachment to it. If it was just a case of, well, my theory is this, well, look at the empirical evidence, the numbers, the facts show that my theory isn't accurate, okay, I'm going to change my theory. But when it's an ideology, when it is a belief held deep in the heart and it's fostered by those that you surround yourself with, then you put up a wall and say, well, I don't trust what you're saying. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to find some fault with it. You're going to argue with it constantly instead of at least having an open mind and exploring it.
I'm wondering where you're getting your numbers about Australia, because I'm reading numbers that are like the absolute opposite from Australian newspapers here that say that in 1996, when stricter gun laws were put into place, and they haven't taken away guns in Australia, that they've just made owning them. There are more restrictions, and
that's an interesting way of saying it. If you restrict the ownership, you're taking them away.
They're not. You can still get guns, and you can still have guns in Australia. But the idea that the murder rate is lower or hasn't changed is not true, according to these numbers I'm looking at right here. The murder rate in Australia is actually much less per capita than here, and the situation in Australia isn't what you were purporting it to be.
I would really like to know where you're getting that from, because everything that I've seen is like, okay, and I will contact my sources and get some information, and please get Buster Bakuber on the show.
Get who?
He's the local NRA.
He's
a heavy hitter with the NRA.
He lives in town. He's on the board of directors of the NRA. His name is Buster Burr.
Buster Bakuber,
I think his real name might be Frank. I'm not sure of that, but I would love to have you get him on the show, and he can set stuff straight. I mean,
it's interesting you bring that up, because they are on the list of people and organizations that I want to get involved with and bring them on the show. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Okay, so there it is. We got to go because we're running very, very late. Just a very interesting statistic out of Chicago. When we come back, let's talk about what's happening with the illegal immigrant children coming into the United States. And again, we have to be careful of the politics and make sure that we maintain humanity for these children. But we also have to keep in mind these are illegals. We cannot forego doing for our citizens in order to do for illegals. WSAU, Wisconsin Morning News, feedback comes right back.